irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and my co-host, Marvin Smith, cannot be with us, but he is out there making a positive difference in the life of one young person today. As usual, we will bring you guests that will inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Now, each week, we will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, and dealing with addictions, and so much more. Now, with each of us having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, we've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and authors sharing valuable stories and helpful information who are all working to keep your family mentally, physically, and spiritually sound and make this world a better place for all of us. And we'll continue to bring you some of those incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, this week, I've been reading up on addiction, and I need to tell everybody that some of the statistics are staggering. Now, did you know that addiction impacts 1 in 4 families in the United States? Now, there's a lot more out there to learn, but we're going to learn more because we're going to talk about this and so much more with our guests today, who are Drs. Carrie Wilkins and Nicole Kosanke, who, along with Dr. Jeffrey Foote, are co-authors of Beyond Addiction, How Science and Kindness Help People Change. Carrie is the co-founder and clinical director of CMC, which is the Center for Motivation and Change, and a dedicated practitioner and researcher of treatments for substance use problems and compulsive behavior. Now, her expertise is regularly sought by CBS Early Show, Fox News, Newsweek, and Psychology Today. Nicole is the Director of Evaluation and Family Services at CMC, and in 2008, she was featured in an O, which is the Oprah Magazine article, about her client's experience in treatment at CMC, which was later published in O's Big Book of Happiness, known as The Best of O. Carrie and Nicole, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you very much for having us. That was a great introduction.
Well, thank you.
You covered all the bases.
That's great. Well, it was very, very deserving. I've been fortunate enough to have a chance to read the book and to go to your website and to learn a lot about what it is that you and CMC are doing. So I've been looking forward to this show. Now, to kind of get right into the part about the book. Now, I know that, you know, your book and your approach has been described as an important tool for families suffering with substance abuse. Now, you have a unique approach to helping families whose loved ones are suffering with the drug and alcohol abuse as well. So can you please share with us a little bit about why and how you came to include families in your approach?
Well, I don't think you can be. Go ahead, Nicole. You go first.
We're gonna compete for the mic. So we work with family members because really there are, you know, that statistic you gave about 1 in 4 families are dealing with substance use. You know, there are 5 people for every 1 person that has a substance abuse problem that are really negatively impacted, and that has a lot to do with families. And families are not only the ones who are so negatively impacted by these issues, but are also a huge factor for helping people to get more motivated to seek treatment. So we really started working with family members out of the research that we knew, which was that, you know, the biggest reason that people will seek treatment is because their family is you know, is really impacting, is being impacted by the substance use. And so the family is a big factor in being able to influence change on the part of someone dealing with these issues.
Well, and Carrie, maybe you can share with us a little bit about, I mean, why this differs from some of the other treatments, some of the other modalities where people suggest that maybe you alienate, you know, that person. I mean, share with us a little bit about some of the other ways in which things were done and why you believe that the success of the way that you're doing it is where we need to be headed.
Sure. I mean, that is one of the reasons why we wrote the book Beyond Addiction, How Science and Kindness Help People Change, because there are so many misconceptions out there about how to be helpful to somebody with a substance use problem. And like Nicole said, families are in the position to have the most influence, right? They spend the most time with the client. They're most affected. The person with the substance problem. They're the most affected. And they have the most leverage. I mean, so they've got a lot to say and a lot mm-hmm. they can do. And instead, they're historically told, you know, don't enable, detach with love, distance yourself. Like you said, some are even mm-hmm. encouraged to alienate the person. So they're really told to do almost the exact opposite of what they want to do. Because I've never met a mother who doesn't want to, like, help their kid. Like, they want to help. Mm-hmm. A spouse who wants to help their, you know, their husband or their wife. It's really a confusing message that they're given, which is to do less. Let the substance user hit rock bottom. Let the substance user can't possibly seek change until they decide on their own. So they're kind of, family members are left in this abyss. One of the things that we do at DNC is a family treatment called CRAFT. It's called Community Reinforcement and Family Training, which is, it's not something we made up. It's actually something that, it's a treatment protocol that is one of the most researched and most effective of all interventions that a family can participate in. And it's essentially training them to use motivation effectively mm-hmm. and to really become a motivating force in their loved one's life. And in the studies, it really wins the horse race time and time and time again. You know, so they put families, a wife or a mother, they assign these people to one of three different conditions, the CRAFT condition, a classic kind of intervention, you know, where you mm-hmm. sit in the room and confront your loved one, or just going to an Al-Anon meeting. And CRAFT, so the wives, the moms who are doing CRAFT, they are successful in getting their loved one into treatment, over 60% of the time, where interventions get about 30% of people in, and Al-Anon gets about 10% of people in. So the differences are pretty pronounced, and yet nobody knows about it. And that's really why we wrote the book and are hoping to get on radio shows like yours so that we can spread the word and people know what their options are.
Well, first of all, I am happy to be one of those people that can help spread the word. Now, let's take one of the people that is sometimes referred to, and that is the enabler. How does CRAFT deal with the enabler, differently, so that the enabler now becomes somebody who can be a motivating source?
Well, it's interesting that you use that word, because I think the word enabler or enabling and the word codependent get used in a wide range of circumstances that are probably not really representative of what everybody means. So I think mm-hmm. they get used too frequently. So we try and be really narrow in defining what is problematic use, because family members get so stuck and feel so ashamed that they've been enabling, that they are codependent. And they've been told by various people that they are, you know, what are you doing with that guy? Like, you're just being codependent when you're trying to help him. And I think that people get really stuck. Like, can I be in a relationship with this person at all without being labeled codependent? You know, are there things that I can do that are helpful that aren't enabling? And so when we work with the CRAFT model, we're really helping people to identify, okay, how can you behave in your relationship in a way that really supports positive behaviors? So really identifying, okay, you don't want your kid to smoke pot. What do you want them to be doing instead? You know, do you want them to be exercising more? Do you want them to be hanging out with this person as opposed to that person? Do they need more structured activities in their life? You know, what are the things that they would be doing if they weren't smoking pot? And figure out how you can set up a rewarding environment that really supports those positive behaviors. So that is the focus of CRAFT. On the other hand, though, there is really helping families to allow negative consequences to occur to their loved one. So that's where lots of people get into this idea of like, oh, you're enabling them because you're standing between them and getting any consequences. You drive them to school in the morning when they oversleep, and that's enabling. So really identifying in CRAFT what are the negative consequences that you can feel safe allowing the person to experience, so that the world becomes the teacher for your loved one, as opposed to you intervening and trying to protect them, which does end up sort of undermining the overall effort, which is you want this kid to experience the negative consequences of his behavior so that he can then weigh the pros and cons of that decision in his mind more accurately, rather than thinking to himself, well, Mom will just like get me out of this. I don't have to worry about that. No, you want him to actually think that this is a possible consequence. And so I have to weigh that in when I decide how late I'm going to stay up smoking pot. I have to think about that in advance.
Yeah. So, and what I hear you saying is that, and again, and I chose that particular word because it's the one that we hear a lot.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, but it's, you know, in the things that we run into, and that we're dealing with parents is that, you know, if we're picking somebody up and and we are transporting them to a specialized program. Now, you know, we're getting a history of kind of what has gone on, either from the therapist or from the school district or someone. But that's one of the issues that we're being told. We're saying, well, one of the reasons why this move needs to be made is because, and they'll name a particular parent or whatever that says that, you know, they are allowing them to, you know, stay at home, not go to school, just do drugs, and have absolutely no consequences. So now there's a decision being made that maybe they need to go to a specialized program because allowing them to remain in that home is not working. So I think that's the thing. And it sounds to me like what you're saying is that rather than removing that parent, you're talking about just educating that parent to what is acceptable and what isn't acceptable. Would that be a pretty good picture?
Yeah, well, one of the things about, in the last 10, 15 years, right, we've been doing a lot of research on what is effective treatment, like what works with substance users. And one of the things that we know, that kind of tracks through all of the interventions that are effective is the teaching of skills. And the treatments for adolescents that are effective are ones that include both the adolescent and the parent. And the model really is, look, these kids, right, people use drugs because they work. They feel good in some way, right? People don't start smoking pot because it feels bad. It feels good. So does a drink. People aren't crazy for wanting to do those things. And, you know, what you want to do is like figure out like, okay, what else in your life can feel good, right? What can compete with that substance use? And what are you self-medicating? Like for most people, it's a really complicated issue. It's not just, oh, you're a drug addict. It's actually complicated. Mm-hmm. And parents in particular, I think, don't have the skills they need to cope. So when I get a parent who's been kind of labeled an enabler, I'm often sitting there thinking, okay, what skills are you lacking that would help you be more effective as a parent? Is it you need to learn how to communicate differently? Do you need to be more assertive? Do you need to know how to set limits more effectively? Do you need to know how to reinforce more effectively? Like, what is it that you're struggling with as a parent that will help you really address the issues that you're seeing in your kid, which may be daily pot use. There are things mm-hmm. that you can do to have an impact in a really positive way, but a lot of parents just don't know, and why would they? I mean, you don't learn this stuff in school. Parents don't get to go to school to learn techniques like this, you know, and so a lot of them get frightened. A lot of them hope their kids grow out of it. A lot of them are busy. You know, you've got single parents. You've got parents with working three jobs. I mean, they're working really hard to just keep up, and it's hard to kind of then manage everything that adolescents are exposed to. I mean, it's difficult being a parent right now. You know, so they also need support, which is, I think, also lacking for lots and lots of parents. It's just a place, you know, to be able to talk about this stuff and again, like learn skills to be effective.
Let me ask Nicole, you know, when these kids, after they turn 18 and they've moved out of the house, but there is obviously still a problem, what are some of the tools that the parents can use to try to get them to get now this person who's technically an adult, and I say technically or chronologically an adult, but doesn't necessarily mean that they're making adult choices, to get this person to make better choices in regards to their issues with addiction?
Well, there's a lot of different levels of independence that pose sort of conflicts in the leverage that parents have. So ideally, a child is increasing in their independence and their decision-making slowly but surely as they get older and having more peer influence, and all of that is really normal. That's what's supposed to be happening, and we want that to be happening. Yet, on the other hand, you know, we have decision-making that is causing problems and is unhealthy. And so you want to somehow find a way, as you're saying, to support the independence but not support the negative behaviors. And I think that is a really tricky age when kids are 18 to 24, let's say, and they are wanting more independence, and in some ways they can handle it, but in other ways they really can't. And so they do need ongoing support and contingencies around their behaviors. And I think parents feel kind of stuck, like, well, they're an adult now. Like, I can't tell them I'm not going to give them their allowance anymore. You know, this isn't as simple, but sometimes it is kind of that simple. You know, if kids are at college, let's say, or they're out working and they're not living at home anymore, usually the parent is paying for that rent.
Right.
You know, it's really hard to step out at 18 years old and be able to support yourself. So usually parents have quite a lot of financial leverage if they are supporting the rent or the cell phone or the cable box or any number of things that feel like a privilege to the child, although the child may perceive that to be, you know, their right. They've been growing up with all of these things, they should continue to have it. But in fact, I think the limits that can be set in high school around, you know, you get your allowance if you do X, Y, and Z chores. That's how it works. You know,
mm-hmm.
if you get the privilege of, you know, going out all weekend long or on weeknights, if you get X, Y, and Z things done, if you don't come home drunk, then you lose some of those privileges for a week. Those things feel infantilizing to do to a college student or somebody who's over 18. Yet those similar kinds of strategies around holding something contingent with another behavior are still applicable and possible,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of times really needed. You know, if kids really are not learning how to act in a healthy way and make good, wise choices, then they're asking their parents to come back in with some of these structures.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a great point when you talk about that age, that 18 to 24, because that seems to be an age right now, and especially at this time of year. We tend to get more calls at this time of the year from parents who are calling our investigation company, but they're saying, can you just check on my young, you know, my young son or daughter, and it's those that have gone off to college. It's in college break right now, and the parents are very, very concerned because they've lost contact with their child, and they fear that it's because, you know, they have relapsed, they've gone back on drugs, or they find out that they haven't been to class the last couple of weeks. But it seems like this time of the year, you know, raises a certain level of anxiety or something, both in the parents and possibly in the young people as well. So I guess a good question for Carrie might be is that, you know, as we head into this holiday season, can you share some tips as to how we can avoid, you know, the holiday stresses that may trigger substance abuse?
I think the first step is to actually just accept it's going to be stressful. I don't think there's, I think most, you know, going into it wishing it weren't or thinking that there was some way you could make it non-stressful is a setup for people to feel upset. I always recommend to my clients and their families, go into the holiday season with your eyes open and really plan for it. Just look at your calendar, know what social events you have, you know, really take into account travel time, you know, all the things that you're trying to squeeze in between Thanksgiving and January 2nd. For most families, it's a lot. People are coming and going, and it's a lot of demands. And to really be focused on pacing yourself, building in some time for self-care. You know, I mean, a lot of substance use is impulsive, right? Even people who have had long periods of sobriety and, you know, for the most part are doing really well, they get really stressed, they get really burned out, they get sleep deprived, you know, they got a lot of demands on them, and all of a sudden you'll see them being impulsive and having a relapse. And it's literally just because they're kind of worn out. They might have good intentions and they might really want to be sober, but they've just worn themselves out and they get to the point where they're not thinking clearly, they're, you know, tired and they just want everything to quiet down, and a drink or whatever their substance of choice might seem like it makes perfect sense, right? So you want to really pace things out and really communicate. You know, so if you're a parent with a kid who you would really like not to be using substances at the, you know, not to be drinking at the Christmas party or smoking pot with your friends, you need to be really clear and validate that that's a hard choice to make as a young adult, right? Like when everybody else is partying and your kid's trying to be sober or, you know, trying to moderate, whatever the goal is, you know, to validate that you really appreciate their efforts, but it's a really hard choice, you know, that it's okay if they get in trouble, if they get in over their heads, you really want them to come talk to you about it, you know, so you're just kind of letting them know that you know it's hard, which just that in and of itself can be really a nice thing to do, you know, brainstorm. Like, just say, I think these next couple of weeks are going to be really stressful. What can we do together to make sure we stay on track as a family? You know, maybe there's something we want to skip. Maybe we want to leave Aunt Jane's party early. It's a drag and none of us want to be there anyway. Let's all leave early and go to the movie. Whatever it is that you need to do, but just keep things transparent and as positive as you can. You also need to set limits. Like if you don't want your kid to stay out till 4 o'clock in the morning, you need to be very clear what your expectations are. You know, I know you might stay out till 4 o'clock in the morning when you're in college, you're home. I really want you home by 1:30. And I know that's a drag and it's going to be hard. I really need you to be home at 1:30. And then if they do it, make sure you reinforce it. You really want to say, I so appreciate your efforts. I so appreciate that you came home on time. Thank you. You know, and really notice when your kid gets it right. Because when there's stress in the mix, a lot of people just focus on the negatives and what's not going right. And they totally disregard and kind of miss all the positive moments.
You just nailed one of the things that is I think so important, and kind of one of the issues that I bring up quite a bit is that you know, it's, you know, catch them doing something good. You know, focus on catching them doing something good, because I think unfortunately so many parents who have sort of been down this road, you know, their anxiety level is so much focused on, you know, catching them doing something wrong. And if we can turn that around, and that's what I hear you saying, and I love it, you know, let's focus on catch them doing something good. And then when there is something that's bad, again, if I hear you correctly, just communicate about it as to what you can do about it rather than making it the biggest focus. Is that about right?
Yeah, you know, yeah, and sometimes, especially when you're working with families who've been through a lot, they're pretty burned out in the process. You know, you'll see a lot of tension, and it's a lot of verbal tension, right? There's a lot of scolding, there's a lot of lecturing, there's a lot of, like you said, noticing when they screw up, and it's all understandable. Parents are burned out, and they're freaked out, and they're frustrated, right? Mm-hmm. But what I'll often tell my families who are kind of in that state, I'll say, you know what, let's just turn everything on its head. Like, I only want you to give compliments, so when they get it right, I want you to notice it, and I want you to compliment it. And when they get it wrong, I want you to basically ignore it verbally, like just don't say anything about it, and give them a behavioral consequence. So like Nicole would say, maybe they don't get their allowance, maybe they don't get their computer, or whatever it is. Like, but do have the behavioral negatives be at play, so you don't have to keep talking about it, right? Because just like lecturing and talking about it again and again and again, like the kid's not probably listening. He heard the lecture before, you know, and it doesn't matter, right? He knows, mom's just going to yell at me again, and I'm going to tune her out. And I'll probably go smoke the pot to tune her out. Right. Mom ignores me and takes away my phone for 2 days, and you know, doesn't reinforce the argument, that might be something different for the kid, right? And then she notices when I get out of bed the next morning and she says, hey, that was really nice to see you at the table. Like, so suddenly I'm getting compliments for stuff that I'm not used to getting compliments for, and I'm not getting yelled at. You know, so you can just change the whole system a little bit, which sometimes that's just enough to really just decrease the tension, which for a lot of families is super important.
And, you know, this is, I think, at this, you're asking about this time of year. I think what Carrie's talking about is so useful at this time of year in particular, to have parents understand that they have permission to give a consequence, follow through on it. You know, ideally it's been discussed in advance so the kid knows, like, look, if you get home on time, that's great. We'll be able to go out as planned in the morning. But if you don't, then you're going to lose the computer for a day or whatever it is, or that money that you wanted to go out this weekend or whatever it is. But to just follow through on what the plan was, and then have permission to, like, let it go. So the let the consequence really stand on its own and have its own impact, but go about your business. You know, it's the holidays. People want to do various things. Like, parents should not feel like they need to be mad and grumpy and be, you know, giving lectures, as Carrie was saying, you know, just because their kid did something they shouldn't do, you know, unless it's to, like, an emergency situation where a lot of attention needs to be paid to something, you know, especially during the holidays. I think parents need to know that they can allow that consequence to have its own impact and then go about their business and have their holiday dinners and go about their shopping and do the things that they enjoy doing in the holidays and really give themselves permission and to have those positive experiences continue and not have everything be overshadowed by, like, here my kid is screwing up again.
Yeah, and I think that's such a great point when you mention about the letting it go part, because if they continue to let that anxiety fester in them, they're not going to be any good to anybody else. You know, not only themselves, right, but obviously everybody else. So, yeah, I think that that's a great point, you know, is to set
up the
consequence.
They'll also miss, if they hang on to the anger, the anxiety about what happened last night, they're going to miss, you know, the positive things that might happen today, not only just for themselves and their own self-care and well-being, but also in the family. Let's say, you know, something negative happens last night, the kid gets a consequence, but later in the day today, like, he's playing nicely with his brother and helping with, you know, putting together a toy set. Like, that's, you know, that's something you miss if you're ruminating about what happened last night and stuck there in the negative consequence, and you miss out on an opportunity to have a pleasant moment and to reinforce something positive that's happening.
I love it. We're going to take a break. For those of you that are listening at home, obviously, as long as you're not driving, if you want to follow along with us, you can go to the website beyondaddictionbook.com. So if you just go to the website, open up another window, you can follow along with us. So stay with us, and we will continue to talk about Beyond Addiction, how science and kindness help people change.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. Our guests today are Dr. Carrie Wilkinson and Nicole Kosenke, and we are talking about addiction. Now, for those of you that were able to open up another window, again, you went to beyondaddictionbook.com, and one of the questions, I guess, for Carrie or Nicole, there are times in which we're meeting with parents, and they seem to have a pretty wide range of description as to what they think addiction is, and I know that you cover it in the book, but share with all of our listeners a little bit about what is addiction?
That's a complicated, that sounds like an easy question. It's not, which is why you get a bazillion different answers.
Exactly.
And I think how it gets expressed in any one individual and in within a family is really unique. I think that's one of the first part of our book really is about just what we know about what science has taught us now about how drugs and alcohol affect the brain and neurotransmitters, how behavior changes happen, how people learn things, all the reasons why people might be using, the rate of co-occurring disorders, especially among teenagers, is unbelievably high. I mean, some studies think it's up to 90%.
Wow.
Teenagers with a substance problem actually have another thing that they're struggling with. And, when we do evaluations with people, I always go back to, what were you like before you started using substances, right? I always want to know, were you an anxious kid? Were you a depressed kid? Was there trauma? Like, what was it like that got you using substances probably in the first place? There was something about substances that worked for you, and so then you've got a whole little bunch of people who use substances, and a lot of those people don't go on to have problems, right? They just use them during different periods of their life, and they never really take hold, and they just move on. Then there's the people that their brains really like the substance for whatever reason. Sometimes it's genetic, sometimes it's circumstantial, sometimes it's environment. It's really so varied, and I think that's my hackles get raised when I hear, all addicts are the same, right? We just treat all addicts the same. They all need the same thing. Well, that could not be more far from the truth. That's really such an individualized problem, and you've got to slow down and really look at the person in front of you and figure out, okay, what's this person doing? What's this relationship with this drug or alcohol all about? Like, what do they get from it? What do they like about it? Because then you can, and how is it supported in their life, right? Because usually there's a bunch of variables around them that kind of support the use, whether it's friends, work environment, who knows? I mean, there's lots of different things. You got to look at the whole picture if you're going to help that person change that relationship because it's a complex process because they've got to learn a bunch of new behaviors. If I've learned to manage my anxiety by having 2, 3, 4 drinks every single night, well, I'm going to have to learn I'm going to have to learn new ways to take care of myself. I'm going to have to learn new ways to manage my anxiety. My spouse is going to have to learn new ways to relate with me, because if I stop drinking, I might be really tense and anxious. They might not like to be around me so much. So you got to really look at the problem with a wide lens. So I'm not really answering your question, but that's part of
why we called the book what we did. You know, Beyond Addiction is really indicating that we think in our society about these issues as if they're one thing, and they're really not. You know, there's a lot of different ways that people come into these kinds of problems, and there's a lot of different ways that people get out of them. And to assume that one thing is going to represent what substance use problems mean for all people is really a mistake. And you miss things that are really important. Like Carrie was saying, you know, you might miss that there is a lot of anxiety or depression or insomnia. You might miss that there is social anxiety. And, you know, these things really matter, because they need to be treated and addressed in order to really have long-term success around the substance use. I mean, one thing that we've been doing a lot recently is different evidence-based approaches to trauma, and really understanding how critical it is to identify that there's a trauma background and really address that. Without doing that, you're really hamstringing yourself in terms of being able to have successful long-term outcomes around substance use. So, you know, it really is a broader issue than we tend to like to think about it in our society, I think. You know, I think people tend to think like, oh, that person's, you know, just fell into that bucket of addiction now, and they're going to stay there. Whether they, you know, whether they stop using or not, they're always going to be there. They're in that bucket. And I think that's really does a disservice to the individualized way that these problems develop and resolve.
Well, your answers are really exactly why I asked the question, because, you know, I will run into parents and they will have gain what they believe is one answer. And so they'll say, well, you know, we just need to do tough love. So go out and find them, bring them back home. We're going to do tough love. That's going to work. And from my standpoint, I immediately ask them what professionals they are working with, which they usually say none. and then proceed to say, you know, let me make a suggestion on professionals that you can start talking to, that you can start working with in regards to helping this, because I don't want to go now and locate your child, bring your child back, and put your child back into this same situation, because in many cases it'll be, okay, well, how many times have they run away? Well, this is the seventh time they've run away. Okay, so my guess is bringing them home, probably not going to get a different result. So for them to understand that exactly what you're saying, if you talk to a professional, bring somebody in, that in many cases the child may actually want to talk with them, because they'll see that it isn't exactly what the parents are saying. You know, it's a tough love thing, and this is what we're going to do because this is what worked for, you know, Uncle James, and this is what, you know.
That whole tough love thing, like, I wish that there's a few words in the addiction treatment world that I wish could just be eradicated, because like when a parent says that to me, I always want to unpack it. I'm like, okay, well, what do you mean by that phrase, tough love? And oftentimes when you really get in there, they actually don't know what they mean, and they're just mad. unfortunately, there are treatment providers who do make that recommendation. You know, they say that all the time. They say, don't enable and use tough love. Two of the most confusing concepts for parents to get their heads around. And that goes back to my point earlier. It's like, that would, for me, be a parent that, like, clearly needs skills, right? They need some skills to, and I think that's what you're saying, like, okay, well, I can't bring this kid back in the home with you taking that strategy when that strategy has resulted in your kid running away seven times. Let's figure out some other strategies. Let's figure out, how can you communicate with your kid differently? You know, what consequences can you put in play that are actually meaningful? And in a kid who's running away a lot, I'd be curious, okay, what can you be reinforcing? What positivity needs to come in the system so your kid doesn't want to go, and they want to stay closer to you? You know, because when parents are pissed all the time. And again, this is not blaming the parents. They're understandably frightened and pissed off, right? When your kid's doing stuff that scares you to death, it's understandable to get mad. And that's the other part of craft, is it spends a lot of time really encouraging parents to take care of themselves, right? You are not going to survive your substance-using adolescent if you are burned out. If you are on your last nerve, if you're having panic attacks, if you're not sleeping, if you're crying all the time, you're not going to be able to deal with this effectively, and your kid really needs you to. So what can we do to get you to take care of yourself, to get more support, to not be isolated, you know, to really make sure you're rested enough to have these tough conversations, you know, to be rested enough that you actually can hold a limit, you know, effectively when you need to. There's a lot of self-care that parents need to be doing, which is really, I mean, Nicole will talk about this because it's one of the hardest things. Like when we're dealing with parents, they just want to talk about their kids, right? And we're always like, and we need to talk about you too.
Exactly.
Because you're burning out. And we've got to help you as much, you know, for you to be effective with your kid, we have to help you feel better.
Well, and Nicole, and then let me ask you this, because right now we're talking about sort of, you know, the anger that they're feeling at this particular time. But I think we also know that there's a lot of guilt and shame involved, you know, in the process of seeking help, be it a partner or your child. So, you know, where does one turn to get permission to take care of themselves and break that negative cycle?
Yeah, there is so much shame involved in these issues. I mean, I was thinking about it earlier when we were talking about, you know, the overlap of substance use and psychiatric problems. So a lot of times parents will feel like they did find the answer, like you said, like it's the marijuana, that's the problem. You know, you just need to stop that and then it's all going to be solved. And that might be true, but it might not. It might be that actually the driver of all the problems is anxiety or depression. There might be trauma in the background that you don't know about. And these are things that really are hard to accept as a parent. It's very painful to think, you know, whether it's my genes that have passed on to this kid to, you know, increase the chances that he's going to be anxious, or something that happened while he was under my care, like I did something wrong. And I think that's a real fear and underlying current of so many parents that we see, is like, what did I do wrong? Tell me what I did wrong so that I can try and undo it. And I think that that's so painful. And I think in our society, we put a lot of pressure on parents to do a lot of things, more all the time. And it's so overwhelming. That's one thing that Al-Anon does really well, is to help people to really feel supported by other people going through similar things. There's a group called Families Anonymous that a lot of parents find really supportive. And taking care of your own needs is really helpful. The thing that I wish would be more involved in Al-Anon and Families Anonymous is more strategies and coping skills around how to impact their loved one or their child's motivation, how to strategize around specific things, which is why we developed this thing called the 20-minute guide, which you can get for free online. You can just print out there's a variety of different sessions to really specifically help parents to understand how is it that they can strategize differently around setting limits, around taking care of themselves, you know, really thinking about how their mental health is being impacted, how their relationships are being impacted. Like, do you and your spouse see eye to eye on these kinds of issues, or is one of you the softy and the other one is the cop? You know, are you taking dividing lines around and polarizing each other, which is very common? And how do you deal with those situations? You know, how do you manage those? So we really put all that information together specifically for parents, and we have another one for spouses on the 20minuteguide.com, so that people could really see the different strategies that can be used, and they're kind of separated out into little exercises that you can do to communicate better, so that you're not constantly having conversations in which the other person is really defensive and angry. Like learning how to calm yourself down and use little communication techniques to help. So I think there's a lot of different things that like we were saying before, families, you know, parents just don't get any lessons around these things. I wish they did. They really don't. And it's terribly unfair to have that much pressure and that much guilt and shame without being offered, you know, real solutions. And that's why, you know, when Carrie and I talk about these issues, we're really focused not on the person as like being one kind of person, you know, a codependent person or, you know, too punishing. You know, we're talking about the behavior instead. Like, what are the skills this person needs to learn to be more effective as a parent and be more effective at taking care of themselves? We really focus on the skills and help people to learn where their deficits are so that they can build them up and practice, just like you would if you were trying to learn how to do anything else in life, you know, learn how to, you know, serve at tennis. Like, you got to practice over and over again until you kind of, it kind of comes more naturally to you.
Now, you mentioned the 12-minute guide, and I think you said it's a 12-minute guide at 12minuteguide.com.
It's the 20-minute guide.
Twenty minutes. Well, I try to do everything a lot faster, so I speed right through it. So it's the 20-minute guide.
THE20MinuteGuide.com. The spelled out 20MinuteGuide.com. There are a variety of different resources on that page.
Okay. And then, and is there also a link to that page from your beyondaddictionbook.com?
You know, best link to go to is actually our website, probably, which is Motivation and Change, all one word, all spelled out. There's tabs on there. So we're in New York City, but we've got tabs on there for families, resources for families, and resources for individuals. And, like, we have so many links to so many resources all across the country. We just tried to build our website so that people could go there and just find other ways to connect, you know, because I grew up in Kansas, and there's not a lot of resources, you know, in the middle of the country, and we're spoiled here in New York. So we tried to make it a place where you could get connected to a lot of things. There's videos of Nicole talking about positive reinforcement strategies and doing family lectures. The 20-minute guide is kind of a workbook for Beyond Addiction, the book. You know, we're just trying to, over time, create just as many resources as we can for families to educate themselves, because I'm a big believer that people just haven't known what to ask for, right? They just, and so, like, what you're doing with your families when they say, I'm just going to do tough love, and you say, hey, we got to find you a treatment professional who can actually be helpful to you, right?
Yeah.
I think family members people just need to be educated consumers when it comes to addiction treatment. They just really do. They need to know the right questions to ask. They need to know, how's my treatment provider trained? Are they really trained in the most evidence-based, research-supported therapies, or are they doing something that they thought was a good thing 20 years ago? Because addiction treatment has changed a lot. We know a lot more than we did. There's medications that are really helpful. There's treatment strategies that are really helpful. You know, so I think people just need to educate themselves and know what their options and resources are. And you can't be alone in this process. You really, really need to ask for help, whether that's a minister at your church, your neighbor, a friend, a psychiatrist, you know, a self-help group, whatever it is, you should not be alone, because having a loved one with a substance use problem can just dump your life upside down and leave you really disoriented. And then you can't be helpful, and most people really want to be.
Well, I just looked up. We are down to our last minute, but I have a listener question that's been emailed over to us, so I want to read this. If you can give us a brief answer, and I will tell everybody, you know, that if we get a more in-depth answer, please, you know, go to our website, answers4thefamily.com, and we'll try to put all the information for you to, you know, if you're driving and you haven't been able to write down some of these websites, please you know, go to our site and we will have all that for you. This question reads, my best friend's daughter suffered a head injury in a car accident when she was 21. Mm-hmm. Her personality changed shortly thereafter from a very balanced, normal young woman to an out-of-control, emotionally unstable person who is constantly in and out of rehab because she continues to use prescription drugs, marijuana, and other substances. My friend is so very discouraged as Not one of the programs or other strategies they have tried has worked for her daughter. I would love to recommend your book, if you feel that it might help. So,
I hope the book helps, but that's a perfect example of how complex this is. That girl probably has a very serious traumatic brain injury, right? And that causes so many different subtle and profound problems. It's going to require a pretty sophisticated program to really help her understand the impact of her traumatic brain injury, you know, understand how substances are affecting her. I mean, that's a very complicated set of variables she just outlined. So it doesn't surprise me that her friend is completely overwhelmed. And the book, there's a couple of books. There's another book, Inside Rehab, by Ann Fletcher, and our book that really kind of go over the treatment industry and how to ask the right questions of treatment programs so that you know you're getting what you think you need and want.
Well, and that's all. So that's also a really good example of, you know, if that person goes to a rehab that doesn't have a lot of sophistication around neurology, neuropsychology,
medication.
Medications that are available that could help protect her around the prescription drug, for instance, you know, if she doesn't get a really sophisticated approach, given the complexities that Carrie's talking about she's probably dealing with in her brain injury, then she might be looked at as an addict. And, you know, all of her problems are encapsulated in her drug problems, which is clearly not the case because of the trajectory of how this came about with the car accident. So I think that's a really good example of how complex these situations can be and how critical it is that the treatment strategies being applied are not single-minded, are not black and white. They're really nuanced and looking at all the complexities together at once.
Well, I want to thank both of you so much for coming on. I wish we had more time. I would love to have you back. For everybody out there, the book is called Beyond Addiction. You got it. Beyond Addiction, How Science and Kindness Help People Change. For everybody out there, be good humans and be back with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
Thanks for having us.
You're welcome.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith, right here on LA Talk Radio.